Greetings once again, Tacoma. John Doherty here for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully. So I think I'm happy to be talking to you today, but let's dig into that a bit. My topic today is going to be optimism versus pessimism on the climate outlook. What are we to think? Can we be optimistic? Do we have to be pessimistic? And does it make any difference? Before we go there, I'd like to remind you that I love getting emails from you. You can email me at John, J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. CCL, of course, is for Citizens Climate Lobby. We're an active bunch of folks, nonpartisan here in the South Puget Sound, talking to folks about climate. And by folks, I mean grassroots and political leaders, etc. So here we go. There's been lots of talk lately amongst the climate-concerned folks that I socialize with about optimism versus pessimism, and it seems to kind of break down along personality lines. Even though we're all looking at pretty much the same data, some folks are like, oh, well, let's be cheery, and other folks are like, wow, this is an impending disaster, and I don't know if I can deal with it. Well, one way we could approach this subject is by kind of doing a little bit of a look at what's good news and what's bad news out there. So let's start off taking a look at some bad news we can see out there, which is a little bit of a cheat because that means we'll finish up on the good news, but let's see how it all plays out. Well, one simple and straightforward place to start looking is what is the record over the last 50 years or so of carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere. Those concentrations are measured in parts per million, and in 1960 we had around 310, 315 parts of per million. Right now we're running about 417 parts per million, which is a 40% plus increase in the last 50, 60 years. And we're looking at the same thing in terms of methane, about the same percentage increase over that time frame. In fact, in terms of carbon dioxide concentrations, we've been seeing some daily hits around 420 parts per million. So no good news there. So how are we doing politically? Well, let's see here. According to the Harvard Law School and a Columbia Law School study, that there's been more than 60 environmental rules and regulations that have been reversed in the last 3 or 4 years, that is, since the Trump administration came into power, and there's an additional 34 rollbacks that are out there waiting. Basically, it seems like if it's good for the environment, then the current administration is opposed to it. Not a lot of good news there. This is just a snapshot, but it's something worth looking at. You probably know that there's been some significant floods in Michigan in the last month. One of the consequences of those floods were a couple dams busting. That kind of points out how unprepared our infrastructure is for the coming impacts of climate change. So infrastructure-wise, we're really not getting ready. You might even make a quick comparison with the COVID. We knew it was coming, but we didn't get ready for it. Not in any kind of adequate way, anyway. Waters in our rivers and lakes are getting warmer as the climate gets warmer, and that's resulting in algae buildups. Another sign of what's happening. It happens slow enough that maybe we can't really pay attention to it like we should, but it's happening nevertheless. We need to take a longer time frame and do comparisons rather than just living day to day. Now, one of the good things that happened a few years ago, relatively good anyway, I guess I'll say, is the Paris Climate Accord, which set out emissions goals out to 2030 and out to 2050 with a goal of limiting, at the very least, the increase in global temperature to less than 2 degrees centigrade and hopefully, quote unquote, 1.5 degrees centigrade. So we're 4 or 5 years in now. How are we doing on that? Well, let's see. There were about 175 countries signed on to that. They made promises, but there were no real penalties for not meeting those promises. And as of right now, there are 8 countries who are meeting their promises that were intended to limit global warming to 2 degrees centigrade by 2050. And there are two out of those 175 countries that are meeting a goal that would limit the warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade. By the way, one of the countries that is on target to meet that 2 degrees centigrade goal is India, a country we like to throw political rocks at from time to time, the argument being, well, look at all that carbon dioxide India is producing. How do you expect us to cut back if they're producing all that carbon dioxide? And also, just an aside, the amount of carbon dioxide they're producing per capita and as a nation is tiny compared to what we're producing right here in the United States. So really not too fair to be throwing rocks at India about their fossil fuel emissions, and especially when you see that they are on track to meet their goals. There is an organization called Climate Tracker, which I recommend to you. Just do a Google, you'll find it. And it's keeping track of how the various countries are doing in terms of those Paris Agreement goals. And they divide performance up into five or so different categories. And the very worst category is labeled critically insufficient. That would be critically insufficient towards meeting those Paris goals for 2 degrees centigrade or less by 2050. Critically insufficient. And that puts us in company with other countries that are also called critically insufficient in meeting those goals. Russia, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the Ukraine, Vietnam. That's pretty unpleasant company for us to be in, but that's where we are. So stop. Can't take it anymore. That is a little look at some of the bad news out there, and some of that bad news is really consequential bad news, particularly how the carbon dioxide and methane contents of the atmosphere continue to increase over time with little sign that that's going to change. So is there good news? Absolutely, there is good news. So let's take a look at some of that good news. Just a snapshot or two here and there. Let's see what we can find. Well, take a look. There's a major pipeline, a gas pipeline that was going to go offshore up along New York State and New Jersey, and the governments of both of those states have refused to permit them. And this is after a multi-year effort by fossil fuel industries with billions, even trillions of dollars of assets, doing everything they could to twist the arms to get approval for those, and those two states stood up to them. I think another good news thing is that the COVID pandemic, because of the economic slowdown that it's caused, has shown that we can clean up the environment, and really it might not take that long if we set our minds to it. I know personally it's real clear here in Tacoma to me that the visibility has gotten clearer. I'm seeing the Cascades, the Olympics, Mount Rainier, and a clarity that is pretty rare, and that's day after day. In fact, the other day when I was out for a walk, I could see all the way up to Mount Baker. So pretty amazing and clear that once we reduce our fossil fuel emissions, it does have an immediate benefit. Okay, here's another piece of what I would say is really good news, and that is that renewable energy is going to surpass coal in electricity production more than likely for 2020, and that's got clean energy production up by 11%, and coal use for electric production down by about 23%. Now, there is a little caveat here. A chunk of that is because of the low cost of natural gas, but still, it's encouraging to see how clean energy is increasing and the cost of clean energy is going down actually faster than anybody forecast it would. So yeah, definitely some good news on that front. Wind energy, one of the questions around wind energy is where are you going to put those turbines? And there's resistance to putting them on land for a number of reasons. And so one of the alternatives is to put them offshore. And the state of Ohio just recently issued a permit for a major wind farm offshore in Lake Erie. It's going to be about 10 miles out off of the lake, and it's going to produce a lot of electricity. And of course, when you're out over the water, usually the wind is stronger, so that makes good sense. Once again, there has to be a caveat there because there's been resistance, ironically, from environmental groups concerned about birds getting killed by the turbines. And without a doubt, wind turbines do kill birds. It's a tiny percentage compared to the other ways birds get killed in the United States. The biggest way by magnitudes is by cats, but it is true that birds have collisions with wind turbines and they die. So our future is not just a choice between the perfect and the bad. The choice is better or worse. And as far as I'm concerned, while everything needs to be taken into consideration, putting up those wind turbines offshore Lake Erie is definitely good news. Another piece of good news comes from the city of Houston, way down there in Texas. They've recently adopted a master plan aimed at creating a cleaner environment with a big focus on auto emissions, one of the biggest emissions that we have to deal with. So congratulations to the city of Houston and good luck on developing that plan into reality. Another piece of good news from South America, the country of Uruguay, currently is making 60% of its energy from renewables. This was kind of forced on them by some issues they had with droughts and their hydropower drying up. And so they've taken the pathway of clean energy and they've been doing a terrific job with that. And the European Union is undertaking a major program, spending billions of dollars on clean energy, renewable energy, cleaner transportation, building renovation, and those kind of things in an effort to shrink their carbon footprint. So definitely good news there too. Another country that's doing a great job is Costa Rica. They're looking at every aspect of creating a carbon-free future. So that's in terms of electric generation, transportation, agriculture, and so on. And they are one of the countries that are on track to meet their Paris commitments. So that's kind of a look at some good news, bad news stuff. Maybe you've done something like that from time to time in terms of making your own decisions on an important issues. A piece of paper with pros on one side and cons on the other side, writing them down. Of course, it just doesn't really work, but it is instructive, of course. But sooner or later, you just can't tote up the good versus the bad and, like a math problem, come up with the answer. So should we be optimistic or should we be pessimistic about the future of the climate in the United States and in the world? Well, here's the thought. I spent 5 years in the Marines, and during that time, I went to several survival schools, and part of survival is psychological, maybe a big part of it. And some studies have been done about survival situations and who succeeds and who doesn't succeed, and it turns out that optimism is a significant player in who succeeds. So what I mean by that is you can take the same people in the same circumstances, and if one group of people is like, well, we're never going to make it, we're screwed, they aren't going to do as well as other people in exactly the same circumstance who say something like, well, this is a tough proposition, but we're going to give it our best shot, and we believe that we can be successful. Note in that nobody's guaranteeing success or failure, but optimism does show up in a documented way as a factor in success or failure. Another look, I have a industrial psychologist friend who told me that there are significant data that shows that people who are slightly more optimistic than the actual reality would warrant do better than people who are actually completely zeroed in on reality or even pessimistic. So slightly optimistic is an asset. Delusionally optimistic, not so much. But mark one up for optimism. I'm reading a book called The Future We Choose. One of the authors is Cristiana Figueres, who is from Costa Rica and who was critical in the implementation of the Paris Climate Accords. She and her colleagues have coined the phrase stubborn optimism. And you know, I really love that phrase. There's nothing the least bit Pollyanna-ish about it. It's realistic, but it puts me in a frame of mind to hang in there for the long haul. We don't know what the eventual outcome of climate change is going to be in terms of impact on our species. We do know there's going to be an impact. We also know that our behavior, the decisions we make, are going to have a significant impact on what the outcomes are, and what we do day to day, week to week, year to year makes a difference. And that stubborn optimism is what carries us through to doing something. I think in the final analysis, I look at myself, and while I worry, I can see that the fact that I do stuff indicates that I'm at core optimistic. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing anything. So part of my invitation today is to invite you to be stubbornly optimistic, hang in there, do what you can, whether it's individual or joining a group, becoming politically active, stay stubbornly optimistic, and that's going to change the eventual outcome. So that's it for today. And looking back, I guess I was happy talking to you today. I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note to john@cctacoma.org. So for now, reminding you once again, live like the mountain is out. And hey, isn't that kind of an optimistic outlook on things? Take care now.